It's May the 9th, we're in Melachim Beis, we're up to Perek Chaf. We have several loose ends that have to do with Sancheriv's destruction. We have not dealt with, in detail, the demise of Sancheriv himself, which was the last thing we read. I mentioned to you that there's going to be an issue with the Teva of Noach, that's going to come up in this discussion, and a very, very startling story. We also have not finished talking about the actual destruction of the army of Sancheriv, along with the circumstances of how big the army was, and that Hashem wanted to make that war into Gog and Magog, and Chizkiyahu being Mashiach, and Chizkiyahu not saying Shir. We haven't dealt with that. We have not fully dealt with all the circumstances leading up to the whole showdown with Sancheriv. We are going to continue and read tonight the beginning of Perek Chaf, chapter 20. We're going to do the first 11 psukim of Perek Chaf of chapter 20, which is going to introduce a new drama that is going on concurrently with the whole story with Sancheriv. We're doing this because this is going to go back in time a little bit, a few days earlier than what we just read before, so that we will have a bigger picture of what's happening. Pasuk says, "Bayami Mahim," in those days. Now, those days means 3 days before Sancheriv's army was destroyed. So if Sancheriv's army was destroyed on the 15th of Nisan, then this would be the 13th of Nisan. So in those days, Chala Chizkiyahu Lamus. Chizkiyahu got sick to die. He got so sick that he was going to die. Vayavoi lov Yeshayahu ben Amoz Hanavi. And Yeshayahu ben Amoz Hanavi came to him. Vayomer lov, and he said to him, Komar Hashem, so said Hashem, Tzav lov Eisecha, command your house, meaning leave your last wishes. Kimesata, for you are about to die. Velo sichya, you will not live. What's the double language? You will die and will not live. Chazal tell us you will die in this world and you will not live for the next world. That is the message that Yeshayahu gave to Chizkiyahu. Clearly we have to understand what on earth could Chizkiyahu have done to warrant that kind of scathing statement from Yeshayahu. Chizkiyahu, the great tzaddik who brought all the Jewish people to the supreme knowledge of Torah, where everybody in Israel were knowledgeable in all areas of Torah. Because of him, Sancheriv's army is going to be destroyed in 3 days, and yet he's told, you are going to die and you will not live. Vayasevas panav el akir, he turned his face to the wall. Vayispalel al Hashem lemor, and he davened to Hashem, saying, this is one of the primary examples of davening that we have in Tanakh. Chizkiyahu's davening is held up as one of the great examples of proper tefillah. So he turned to the wall and he davened. From here we derive that it is appropriate not to have anything separating between oneself and the wall while davening. Now, in a shul, when you have a lot of people davening together, it is impossible for everybody to be up against the wall, and that's why it has evolved that the Mizrach, the eastern wall, is considered to be the place where the important people or person sits. The rabbi sits up at the eastern wall. That's because since not everybody can sit at the wall, so we accord that kavod to the leadership. That's from here. So even though it is preferable to be up against the wall, but if one cannot be up against the wall, which is the case in shul for most everybody, then one is to be stand in a way where there will be as little distraction as possible. The advantage of the wall is that provided that the wall doesn't have anything on it, then there's no distraction. It's just a blank wall. and that prevents distraction while davening. We're talking here about Shmona Esrei, and that's the reason why it is best to be up against the wall. To be in front of a wall where there is an interesting painting or notice on the wall or some such thing, then it is better not to be up against the wall, because then that is distracting. If one cannot be against the wall, which again, that is most of the time, then one should make sure there's nothing distracting in front of them when they daven. And therefore, one should only have in front of them a sitter. That should be the only open book in front of them. There should be no other open books in front of a person when they are davening, because this open book, even if it's a sefer, might distract them. If your Tehillim is open and you're davening Shmona Esrei, the Tehillim might distract you. Therefore, the Tehillim should be closed while davening Shmona Esrei. The only book that should be open should be the sitter, if any, or to say it by heart. One should either have their eyes closed, or their eyes should be in a sitter. Their eyes should not be anywhere else, because again of the concern of being distracted. There should not be items in front of a person that would distract them while they are davening. So I just mentioned books, but there could be other items that could be distracting. The person might want to look or whatever it is, or deal with something, so that a person should be careful. I always, in my mind, I question, I know it's in vogue, I suspect this is with men more than women, but it's in vogue to daven from one's phone, which is, I guess, convenient because you don't have to have a separate book for a sitter, and it's permitted to do so. I'm just always concerned with this point that a phone is probably the most distracting item that anybody ever has, and here they're davening from it. So, you know, I'm not saying it's prohibited to do so, but one has to be very careful not to get distracted. Certainly, any messages that would pop up on the phone, indicating that there is a call or there's a text or there's an email, whatever it is, the person is getting a message about, then they should not use that phone. That would be, it's either the messages should be turned off, I don't know how you do that, I don't have these phones, or the phone should not be used. But if one who's davening from a phone, and that phone is going to alert them to a message, even without a sound, just going to alert them visually, then it should be prohibited to use that phone for davening. That should not be used, because that is a distracting item, rather than something which they would properly daven from. But again, that's all derived from here, because Chizkiyahu turned to the wall and davened, meaning an area that he would not be distracted. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Ana Hashem, please Hashem, zechar na'is asher yisalachti lefanecha, remember now that which I went before you. Be'emes, uvalevav shalem, in truth and with a complete heart. Ve'hatov be'enecha asisi, and I did what is good in your eyes. Vayev Chizkiyahu b'chi gadol. Chizkiyahu cried a great crying. He, the tears were pouring forth in this davening. Chazal asked the question, what is added with the words, Vahatov beinecha asisi, I did what was good in your eyes? He already said, I went before you with truth and with a complete heart. So what do you mean, I did what was good in your eyes? It seems anticlimactic. I mean, you know, obviously he did what was good in Hashem's eyes if he did all what he said before. So Chazal say, this is referring specifically to one of the things that we mentioned earlier, that Chizkiyahu did. Remember, he did three things, three courageous things for which he was applauded for by the Chachamim. One was that he cut down the copper snake. Another is that he dragged his father's bones on a coffin made of ropes in a degrading fashion. And the third, which is what this is alluding to, is that he hid the Sefer Refuos, that he put away the book of remedies that was written by Shlomo HaMelech. The reason he did so is because people were relying on the book of remedies rather than on Hashem. What Chizkiyahu is saying over here is, here I am sick, I put away the book of remedies, I made sure that no one could use it, so that people would not rely on the book, but rather daven to you, Hashem, and I am doing that right now. So that is what he means, V'atov v'enech asis, I did it was good in your eyes, and therefore save me from this sickness. Now, he was sick to die. Up until this point in history, no one had recovered from a sickness that was a death-related sickness. That had never happened before. The history of illness goes as follows. Up until the time of Avraham Avinu, nobody aged. Everybody just remained, I guess, looking like an adult. They did not age. And when it was time to die, a person would sneeze, their neshama would leave them, and they would die. That's why we have a minhag to say, gesundheit, or something along those lines, so gesund, something that with a bracha in it when a person sneezes. That was what would happen. The problem Avraham encountered is that people, since Yitzchak looked like Avraham, people would see, Yitzchak would see Avraham. There was a 100-year difference between the two men, and people couldn't tell the difference. That's a pretty dramatic mistake. And therefore, Avraham davened that a person should age. That way people could tell that a person is older. The age that Avraham davened for was not it was not aging in the sense that we know it today, where a person becomes weaker. It was only that a person should look older, so that would be respected properly for their age. And Hashem listened to Avraham. Yaakov Avinu had the problem that he needed to know when he was going to die, so that he could give a bracha to his children, as he does in Parashas Vayechi, prior to his death. So he davened that a person should know that they're about to die by becoming sick in a manner that it was clear that they were not going to recover and they were going to die. And this way they would know that it's time to get their affairs in order because they're about to leave this world. So that was what Yaakov Avinu added to the to what happened. Then there was sickness. At that point, no one would get better from sickness. We had earlier that Elisha became sick and then got better. And that was a novel thing that happened in Elisha's time. Chazal say here as well, no one had gotten sick and recovered before. I don't know exactly the difference between Chizkiyo's sickness and Elisha's sickness. I don't know if Elisha's recovery just wasn't known. But it's the same thing. They both were sick to die and they both recovered, but Elisha's sickness wasn't so well known. Chizkiyo being the king is a more dramatic thing. Or if the nature of the sicknesses were a little different. What, be that as it may, it certainly was not common for anybody to get sick and to recover. But here, Chizkiyo's tefillah is listened to. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Vayihi Yeshayahu lo yatsa. Yeshayahu had not even left Chatzera Tichona. He had not even left the outer courtyard of the palace, as he had just announced to Chizkiyo that he was going to die and not even make it to Olam Haba. And now Chizkiyo davens, and Yeshayahu hasn't even left the outer courtyard. Udvar Hashem hayo ilav lemar, the word of Hashem was immediately to Yeshayahu, saying, Shuv, return, v'amar tol Chizkiyo, and say to Chizkiyo, Negid Ami, the leader of my nation. He calls Chizkiyo the leader of my nation. Clearly Chizkiyo is not a bad person. Ko'amar Hashem Elokei David Avicha, so says Hashem, the God of David your father. Shamati es tefilasecha, I listened to your prayer. Ra'isi es dimasecha, I saw your tears. Hineni rofei lach, behold, I am going to heal you. Bayom HaShlishi, on the third day, 3 days from now, Talebeis Hashem, you will come up to the house of Hashem, meaning in health. That's going to coincide with the destruction of Sancheirev. So now we see that Sancheirev's destruction also has with it, we already learned before that Sancheirev's destruction would also have the growing of crops, that the land had been ravaged and there was nothing to eat, and that Hashem said with the destruction of Sancheirev there will be crops that will grow and sustain the people. Along with that would be the healing of Chizkiyo. All of that comes at the same time, which would be the first day of Pesach. Hashem wanted Yeshayahu to go immediately back to Chizkiyo and tell him that he was going to get better. And the reason why he wanted him to go immediately, Chazal tell us, is because Hashem did not want there to be a rumor that would be started that Chizkiyo is about to die. So since Hashem rescinded the gezerah, the decree, so quickly, Hashem wanted that to be known immediately, that to nip it in the bud, that it should not get around that Chizkiyo is about to die, because he's not going to die. Vahusafti, Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Vahusafti al yamecha, I will add on to your days, Chamesh Esrei Shana, 15 years, Umikaf Melech Ashur at Silchan, I will save you from the hands of the king of Ashur of Assyria, that's Sancheriv. Ve'isoyir Azos, and this city I will also save. Ve'ganosi Alamir Azos, I will protect this city, Lamani, for my sake, Ulaman David Avdi, and for the sake of David, my servant. A couple of observations before we read any further. One is, this first observation, I don't think we're going to take it any further, at least certainly not now, but this just, it's so interesting just to be aware of this. If our dates are correct, that Chizkiyahu became sick on the 13th of Nisan, and was sick for the 13th, the 14th, and on the 15th he got better, which is the first day of Pesach, coinciding with the destruction of Sancheriv. If that's the case, then it is just fascinating that we know that Haman made his decree on the 13th. He drew the lots on the 13th of Nisan, same day. The Jews fasted on the 14th and 15th and 16th of Nisan, and on the 16th of Nisan is when Esther went to the second party with Ahasuerus and Haman, and accused Haman, and Haman was hung on the 16th day of Nisan, the second day of Pesach. That's when Haman was hung. However, the Megillah says, for the first party of Esther, Vayihi Bayom HaShlishi, was on the third day. Now, many make a mistake and think that when it says the third day there, it means, it says there that Esther wore her finery, and she went before the king. That's when she was afraid that the king wouldn't extend his scepter to her, that she went before the king. So many understand that that means, I shouldn't say make a mistake, many understand that that means the third day of the fast. That's when she went before Ahasuerus. But Rashi explains that is not so. The third day in that context does not mean the third day of the fast. It was actually the second day of the fast. The second day of the fast was the first party that she called with Ahasuerus and Haman. And then she said, I want to make another party tomorrow. Tomorrow was the 16th of Nisan, the third day of the fast. And that's when she accused Haman. So then why does the Navi say, why does the Megillah say, on the third day is when she went before Ahasuerus, when it was really only the second day of the fast? So Rashi explains it was the third day from the drawing of the lots, which was on the 13th of Nisan. It was the 13th of Nisan is day one. The 14th of Nisan, which is the first day of the fast, is day two. The 15th of Nisan, which is the second day of the fast, was day three. Vahi Bayom HaShlishi, on the first day of Pesach, that's when she went before Ahasuerus, and Ahasuerus extended his scepter to her. So it comes out that the third day mentioned in the Megillah is the same third day, calendar date, mentioned here. The third day from the 13th of Nisan. Just as Chizkiyahu became sick on the 13th of Nisan, and Hashem says, on 3 days from now, you will be healed. Those two sequences fit in together. So it's an interesting observation. We're not going to take it any further right now. I'm not sure if we will in the future, but just to be aware of that, it's an interesting that it comes together like that. No question?
When he drew lots, how many drew lots? It was a year before the fasting and the parties, correct?
It was 11 months before the war. No, the fasting parties were the next day. It was 11 months before Purim. Before the war.
Got it.
But the fasting and the parties happened immediately. Most of the Megillah takes place over a span of 4 days. 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th of Nisan, not Adar.
Wasn't the party on Yom Kippur, though? Party that Ahasuerus...
Oh, that may have been. But that's a very quick thing, the first parak.
Okay.
This is, I'm saying, the bulk of the Megillah is over those 4 days. The dramatic part of the Megillah is over those 4 days. Another point, this the Gemara says, that you'll notice that Chizkiyahu said in Pasuk Gimel, in verse 3, he says, please Hashem, remember that I went before you and with a complete heart and in truth. So he's asking to be saved in his own merit, in his own zchus. But in Pasuk Kain, verse 5, it says that Hashem says, I am saving you in the merit of David, your father, your ancestor. Not in his merit, but in David's merit. The Gemara says, anybody who is tole bizchus atzmo, that he makes the thing that he's praying for dependent on his own merit, he is answered in the merit of somebody else. But if he davens in the merit of somebody else, then he is answered in his own merit. Meaning that when one davens, one is not supposed to invoke their own merit, one is supposed to invoke the merit of others on their behalf. Even if a person does have a lot of merit, they're not supposed to use their own merit in their davening, but rather it should be in the merit of somebody else. That's the appropriate way to daven. So this was a mistake that Chizkiyahu made, and that's why in Yeshayahu, where the same story is recounted, there is a verse, let me read it to you if I can find it quickly enough. There in Yeshayahu, I'll give you the address if I can find it. Yes. It's in Perek Lamaches, chapter 38, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. It says, Hine l'shalom mar li mar. It's, behold, for peace, it is bitter for me, it is bitter. So the Gemara says that Chizkiyahu, even though he, of course, was pleased that he got a message that he's going to get better, that's the peace being alluded to, but it is bitter for him because as he is getting this message from Yeshayahu, he is understanding that he made a mistake. And on his level, again, we're talking about the great Chizkiyahu, whose level is almost unparalleled, for him it's considered a chet, a sin. A very minor sin, but nevertheless it is considered a sin that he davened in his own merit. If any of us would have done the same thing, of course it would not be a sin at all. It would just be that it wasn't optimal. But for him, not optimal is akin to a sin. And so he says, Mar li mar, it is bitter for me, even though I've been healed, because I discovered through the fact that I was healed, the way Yeshayahu gave me the message, that I actually did something wrong in the way that I davened. So there is he makes mention of that point. The Gemara mentions that here as well. Yeah.
Is there any way that we could learn of the time span within which our tefillah should be answered?
That's it would be very nice if we got answered the same way Chizkiyahu is answered. Unfortunately, it rarely happens that way. And the Gemara says that the iyun tefillah means examining one's prayer. So iyun tefillah, there's one statement in the Gemara that says that's a good thing, and there's one statement in the Gemara that says it's a bad thing. So the Gemara says, when is it good, when is it bad? So the Gemara says, iyun tefillah, examining one's prayer is good, means to pray with kavana, with proper attention to the words, to know what one is saying, and to think things through properly, and to keep focused on the davening. That's the good type of iyun tefillah. The bad type of iyun tefillah is to expect to be answered. The Gemara says a person should daven and not expect to be answered the way that we want to be answered. It may happen, and we know it can happen, but the davening should be done without expectation of being answered. That's what the Gemara says.
So why are we asking?
What?
Why are we asking?
We're hoping Hashem will answer. We're davening because Hashem commanded us to daven.
Right.
That's why we're davening. Hashem says that when a person has a trouble, a tzara, they should daven. That's why we daven, because Hashem says to daven. Hashem says, I want to hear from you that you are requesting things from me. That's why we do it. But we are not doing it with expectation of being answered. That just leads to heartache.
You're saying a hope rather than an expectation.
Right. It's not an entitlement. We're not entitled to being answered. That's the point. Right. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Vayomer Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu said, "Kehu develes teinim, take a cake. Thank you of figs. They used to dry their figs, and then they would smush them into a cake. It was a common what's that?
Compress.
Yeah, compress them into a cake. Well, smush is the technical
smush
term.
Is good.
So they would compress them into a cake, and that was a very common thing." So he says, take a cake of figs, vayikhu, and they took it, vayasimu al hashchin, and they put it on the boils. Evidently, we didn't know this before, Chizkiyahu's sickness included boils. His skin was compromised through the sickness. So he says, take this cake of figs and place it on the skin, that's not well. Vayechi, and it got healed. The Gemara says this is a nes besoch nes, a miracle inside of a miracle, because the Gemara says if you take a cake of figs, a cake of figs is moist and sticky, and you place that on healthy skin and leave it on the healthy skin, it will compromise the skin. It will make the healthy skin not so healthy. It's not a healthy thing. It's not a moisturizer. It's not a good thing to put on one's skin. So Yeshayo took something which is bad for skin, had it put on Chizkiyahu's skin, and it made the sick skin better. That's a nes b'soch nes, a miracle inside of a miracle, similar to what we mentioned before, that Gavriel, the Malach Gavriel, was the one who was sent. I don't know if we mentioned this or not. Did we talk about the Malach Gavriel and the Hanani Mishael and Azariah? No, we didn't talk about that. Okay, well, I'll mention now real quick, but we'll have to come back to it later.
That the
Malach Gavriel was the angel that was sent when Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah later on are going to be thrown into the fire. He's the one that was sent to save them from the fire. He's the same angel here that destroys the army of Sancheriv. He's going to save them from the fire. The Malach Gavriel, the angel Gavriel. So the Gemara says that's a nes besoch nes, a miracle is not a miracle, because Gavriel is the Malach of fire, not the Malach of cooling off fire, the Malach of making fire. And so Hashem sent the Malach that makes fire to actually protect or cool down the flames around Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. That's called a nes besoch nes, a miracle inside of a miracle. So that's what Yeshayahu does. Pasuk Ches, Vayomer Chizkiyo el Yeshayahu, Chizkiyo said to Yeshayahu, Ma'os, what is the sign, ki yirpa Hashem li, that Hashem will heal me? V'alisi vayom ashlishi beis Hashem, and I will go up on the third day to the Beis HaMikdash. I'd like to have a sign that this is going to happen. Now, sometimes asking for a sign connotes a lack of emunah. Yechizkiyahu is not criticized for asking for a sign, and you'll see why in a moment. You'll see why he was not criticized, because he actually had greater things in mind. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vayomer Yeshayahu said, Zelecha ha'os, meis Hashem, this is the sign from Hashem. Ki yaseh Hashem es hadavor asher diber, when Hashem does the thing that he said, halach hatzel eser malos, im yashuv eser malos. He gives him a choice. Would you prefer that the tzel, that the shadow, right now it was the afternoon, that the shadows of the afternoon will remain this way for 10 ma'alos, 10 ascensions,
degrees.
10 degrees. Now, I think we can call that hours. I'm not sure if exactly it's an hour, but something like that. And we're dividing the day into degrees. So 10 degrees, it'll stay that way. In other words, the sun will stop for 10 ma'alos, 10 degrees. Or would you like the sun to go backwards 10 degrees and then continue from there? So in other words, either way, the day is going to be extended by 10 degrees. But would you like it to be that the sun remains as is, or do you want it to go backwards? Vayomer Chizkiyahu, so Chizkiyahu responded, Nakel atzelin tos eser malos. It is easier for the shadow to remain as is for 10 degrees. Lohi, that is not so. Yashuv atzel achoranis eser malos. Let the shadow go backwards 10 degrees. I would like there to be a public sanctifying of Hashem's name. You'll recall that Chizkiyahu's father Achaz was given the opportunity that there should be a sign. Remember when the Navi came to him, Yeshayahu came to him and said, you're going to be saved. And then he said, what sign would you like to show that you're going to be saved from the two armies that were attacking Achaz? And Achaz said, I don't want any signs, because I don't want Hashem's name to be sanctified through me. He didn't want it. Even as Hashem was saving him, he did not want to sanctify God's name. Chizkiyahu here is the antithesis of his father, as we have seen the entire time with Chizkiyahu. And here, the reason he asked for a sign is he's trying to correct what his father did wrong. And in fact, it is a direct correction. because, as you'll see in the next pasuk, Va'ikra Yeshayahu Anavi al Hashem, Yeshayahu Anavi called to Hashem, Va'yashav es hatzel ba'malos, and Hashem returned or moved back the shadow with the degrees, Asher yarda b'malos achaz achoranis eser malos, that it had gone down that same amount of degrees in the days of Achaz. Now it went backwards 10 degrees. What does that mean? When Achaz died, so Hashem wanted Achaz to be buried with as little honor as possible because he was such a Rasha. And Hashem wanted it to be quick. Therefore, Hashem made the day move extremely quickly. 10 degrees of the day were lost in that day that Achaz died, which forced them to bury him quickly. And they had no time for eulogies or any other type of fanfare. So here, that same amount of time that was lost then is regained because the sun goes backwards and it is for Chizkiyahu. So you see that there's a direct connection between the sun's moving backwards for Chizkiyahu and the sun moving forward for Achaz. The time being lost for Achaz is now gained with Chizkiyahu. So that supports what we are saying over here, that Achaz... What's that?
It sounds like daylight savings time.
Well, hold on. Well, you have to see how much time we're talking about. Achaz was he did not want to sanctify God's name, and so therefore he didn't deserve to have any eulogies for himself. But Chizkiyahu specifically wants to sanctify Hashem's name, and therefore he merits this sun going backwards. Now, this apparently takes place on the 13th day of Nisan. It apparently takes place on the 13th day of Nisan. That's what it seems, if we have our dates correct. Then it happens on the 13th day of Nisan, which means that that year, the 13th day of Nisan, was a very long day. As we will see, not tonight, because we're stopping here. We're not going any further in Malachim tonight, although we have other things to see. What we will see that the sun moving backwards was noticed throughout the globe, and there is a particular king that took interest in this, and it leads to the next phase of the story post Sancheirev. We'll get to that, Mirtz Hashem. I don't know if it'll be next week or down the line, but we're going to get to that, Mirtz Hashem, and that's further in this parak. The sun moved backwards as far as hours are concerned, at least 6 hours. I don't know if it was 10 hours, but at least 6 hours the sun moved backwards at this time. So, and you'll see, well, that'll be clear in the next phase of the story. So I'm just letting you know that it was a significant amount of time that the day was longer. Now, you'll recall that we learned last week that Sancheirev was told by his stargazers that he needed to be in Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan. Only thing is, he was told this on the 13th day of Nisan. And he gathered his entire massive army together, and they literally ran to Yerushalayim, and they got there on the 14th of Nisan. The Gemara says it was a 10-day journey, and it took them only one day. I don't know if this contributed to Sancheirev's attempt to get there in time. Since the 13th of Nisan ended up being an unnaturally long day, it could be he thought he could make it. He did make it, but not because the 14th of Nisan was made into a long day, just Hashem gave him the opportunity to get there and then to be destroyed. So you have very funny things going on over here. The 13th of Nisan, you have a day that is at least 50% longer than a regular day, and then you have the 14th of Nisan, where you have a massive army that's able to travel 10 times what an army could normally travel in one day. So you have funny things. And then, of course, the next day, the whole entire army is destroyed. So you have a lot of strange happenings going on in the natural world at this time. Yeah.
When Yeshua had the sun remain up, do we know for how long? And is that ever corrected so that time...
The Gemara discusses the length of time that the sun remained up, and there's a difference of opinion how long it was, whether it was, if I remember correctly, there's several opinions, whether it was How many? What's the minimum over there? Is it? Hold on. I think that the different opinions are 8 hours, 16 hours, 24 hours, and 48 hours. I think those are the four opinions in the Gemara over there. Right. So I don't know of a direct correction of that. I once attended a shiur where the premise of the shiur was to show that every time time was manipulated, it was made up for. And you have various with Yaakov Avinu, for example, you have the sun set quickly for him when he came to the Beis Hamikdash. To the Har HaBayis, to the Temple Mount. The sun set quickly so that he would stay there. And it was on his way to Lavan, on his way back from Lavan, where he got wounded by the angel of Esav. It says the sun came up early for him. Rashi there says the amount of time that it set early when he was on his way to Lavan, now it came up that much time early on his way back from Lavan. So the premise of the shiur was to show that that was always the case. It was a very, very long time ago, and I do not remember whether Yehoshua was addressed or not. Now, why did Chizkiyahu get sick? What on earth could he possibly have done? The Gemara tells us that Chizkiyahu had done something wrong, sinful actually, but he thought it was correct. And that is that Chizkiyahu saw with Ruach HaKodesh that he would have a child that would be a Rasha. And that is in fact what happens. Unfortunately, Chizkiyahu is succeeded by Menashe. Menashe, the king, is not the same person as Menashe, the son of Yosef, back in the Chumash. Menashe, the king, is going to be a terrible Rasha, at least at first. And Chizkiyahu saw this through Ruach HaKodesh, that he was going to have a son who was a terrible Rasha. Now, that in and of itself is difficult, because we know how Kol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Mira Shamayim Hashem does not determine whether a person is going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. That is a person's own free will. Hashem determines everything else about the person and their circumstances. So, it's unclear exactly what it is that Chizkiyahu saw, but he may have seen that that this child he would have would be have so many things not working in his favor that it was very likely he'd become a Rasha. I'm not sure if that's the case, or he actually saw that he'd become a Rasha. Be that as it may, therefore Chizkiyahu did not want to have children, and therefore he did not marry. So Chizkiyahu did not marry so that he would not have children, so that he would not have a child who would be a Rasha. Now, Chizkiyahu is the line of David HaMelech. If he doesn't have children, then Mashiach cannot come from him. Now we know Hashem almost made him Mashiach, but the line would have ended with him had he not married. Now that doesn't mean that David's line would have ended. There are other lines, there could have been other lines, of David HaMelech. We had a time earlier with Yehoash where the line of David HaMelech was nearly eradicated, where only one person survived. But at this point, there are more lines. Yeshayahu himself is from the line of David HaMelech. Remember that. He was the cousin of the king. So there are more than... But it would not have been able to go through Chizkiyahu if Chizkiyahu would not be Mashiach and he wouldn't have any children. Then obviously Mashiach can't come from Chizkiyahu. There is a mitzvah on a Jewish man that he must marry. There is no mitzvah on a Jewish woman that she must marry. There is a mitzvah on a Jewish man that he must marry. The mitzvah is not to marry. The mitzvah is to have children. That's the mitzvah, pru or vu, which is a mitzvah on a Jewish man. It is not a mitzvah on a Jewish woman. The way that a Jewish man fulfills that mitzvah is through marriage, because obviously a relationship without marriage is not permitted. Therefore, the only way is through marriage. And so marriage is a mitzvah because it is the only way to properly fulfill the mitzvah of having children. There is a discussion, why would it be that women would not have the mitzvah of bearing children, since women are the ones who bear children, and most of the time women are the ones who are more focused on having children. So why would there not be a mitzvah on a woman to have children? So there are various answers given. One of the more famous answers is that since childbirth is dangerous, there would not be a mitzvah that would command someone to do something dangerous. Meaning, unless the danger is the mitzvah itself. Meaning, there's a mitzvah for a person to give up their life if for Hashem. But there, the mitzvah is to give up one's life. Here, the mitzvah is not to give up one's life. The mitzvah is to have a child. So, since that is a dangerous thing to do, or there's danger to it, so some say that is why there's no mitzvah on a woman to have children. Whatever the reason is, but that is the case, that the mitzvah is on a man. Therefore, Chizkiyahu, in not marrying, was nullifying an explicit mitzvah in the Torah. So, he is therefore being taken to task. If a person not on Chizkiyahu's level would not marry and not have children out of a decision that way, they made a decision not to marry and not have children, that was their decision, a man, they would be doing something wrong. Would they get a message that they're going to die and lose their Olam Haba? No, because we're not on the level of Chizkiyahu. But Chizkiyahu, on his great level, he was held accountable in a very, very stringent and a very powerful way, and therefore he was going to lose his chelik in Olam Haba. The Gemara tells us that Hashem had a dilemma, so to speak, kiviyachol. And that is that Chizkiyahu knew that he wasn't going to have children, and therefore, excuse me, that his child was going to be a rasha, so he didn't want to have children. Yeshayahu knew that it was wrong, and he really needed to go tell Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu wasn't sure if what he was doing was right or wrong. Neither Chizkiyahu nor Yeshayahu went to the other one. Chizkiyahu did not go to Yeshayahu to ask. Yeshayahu did not go to Chizkiyahu to tell him that what he was doing was wrong. Each one felt that the appropriate thing is the other one should come to me. They each brought proof to this from previous examples in Tanakh, where we find the king and the Navi who went to whom. And in various cases, you find that either the Navi went to the king, or the king went to the Navi. Here, neither of them went one to the other. Neither of them was standing on principle because of their own ego. They were standing on principle because of the position that they held. That the Chizkiyahu said it would be degrading to the office of the king for me to go to Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu said it will be degrading to the office of the Navi for me to go to Yeshayahu. To Chizkiyahu. So Hashem had a dilemma. So the Gemara says Hashem is the ultimate compromiser. He thought that somebody else was. Hashem is the ultimate compromiser. And what he did is he made Chizkiyahu sick, and he told Yeshayahu, now you must go and visit the sick. Because everybody has to visit the sick. And therefore, Yeshayahu was forced to go to Chizkiyahu and deliver this message, you're going to die and you are not going to live. Chizkiyahu said back to Yeshayahu, the Gemara tells us, but the reason why I didn't marry is because I didn't want to have children, because I saw with Ruach HaKodesh that my child would be a Rasha. Yeshayahu said back to Chizkiyahu, Bahani kvashi derachmana lamalach. These hidden things of Hashem, what is it your business? It's not your business to think about whether you should or shouldn't have children based on something you saw in Nevuah. Your job is to listen to the Torah. The Torah says you have to have children, which means you must marry. The fact that you saw that you're going to have a Rasha, that does not change your obligation. Don't overthink this situation. This is a very, very important message for all of us. People tend to do this all the time, where we We overthink things. And we think, am I supposed to do this, am I supposed to do that? And we have all kinds of motivations and reasons and things that help muddle our brains into what to do. The bottom line is, you got to do what the Torah says. So if the Torah says to do A, B, or C, but there's this, but, the Torah says do A, B, or C. That's it. And that's what we do. So now there are times where we don't know what the Torah says. That's a different discussion. But here, that's the message that Yeshayahu gave to Chizkiyahu. Now Chizkiyahu, of course, knew this already, Chizkiyahu being as great as he was, but he thought that in this case it would override what the Torah says because he was given a nevuah that he's going to have a rasha. So Yeshayahu told him he's wrong. Chizkiyahu accepted this. He accepted Yeshayahu's tochacha. Now I want you to notice, because we're going to come back to this probably in a few weeks, but I want you to notice that Chizkiyahu is displaying a really significant measure of humility, because here somebody, the Navi comes and says you're going to die and you're not going to live. He doesn't argue with him. He accepts that point, and he explains why is it that he did not marry, and then Yeshayahu told him he's wrong. He accepts it. He does not fight with Yeshayahu, because Chizkiyahu was a humble person. Chizkiyahu then says to Yeshayahu, I accept. I'm going to have to marry, and I will marry. But now, Havli Bartecha, give me your daughter as a wife. Because perhaps my zechus and your zechus combined will serve to undo the evil decree. So Yeshayahu says to Chizkiyahu, it's too late. There already is a gezerah. The decree has happened. You can't change it. Chizkiyahu now turned to Yeshayahu, and it was Chizkiyahu's turn to give Musar, to admonish Yeshayahu. And he said, Ben Amotz, this is what the Gemara quotes, Ben Amotz, the son of Amotz, that's Yeshayahu Ben Amotz, Kalei Nivuas Chavitze, finish your Nivuah and leave. Kach Mikublani Mibes Avi Abba, this is my Kabbalah, this is my tradition from the house of my father, meaning David HaMelech. Afilu cherev chadam umnachas al tzavar shaladam, even if a sharp sword is laying on the neck of a person, al yimna atzmo min arachamim, he should not hold himself back from mercy, from trying to merit and daven to Hashem to be healed. Because as we mentioned, Chizkiyahu stands for davening. That's one of the things he stands for. He stands for Torah, he also stands for davening. He also stands for Malchus. Chizkiyahu stands for all three crowns. The crown of Torah, the crown of royalty, obviously, and also the crown of Avodah. He's not a Kohen, but in davening, he is a prime example of davening. And he says to Yeshayahu that we never give up begging for mercy from Hashem. Doesn't matter if there's a decree. Yeshayahu now turns around and accepts the Musar of Chizkiyahu. It's just an amazing thing. Two great people, two leaders of the nation, each scolding the other, and they each accept the other's admonishment. It's really an amazing thing. Where else would you find such a thing? You never find that. The egos don't allow for it. But these two people, these incredible people, they're able to accept the Musar. And Yeshayahu does give his daughter to Chizkiyahu in marriage. And they do have a son, Menashe, who unfortunately does become a Rasha. Could it have been averted? We'll talk about that, Mitzvah Hashem, in quite a while, when we get to Menashe. We're not ready to talk about Menashe right now. But that we do have the two great Zechusim of Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu's daughter, as parents of Menashe, and we'll have to see that unfortunately it does not stop Menashe from becoming a Rasha. Yeah.
Do you know Yeshayahu's daughter's name?
Yeah, we have her name. We'll get to it later. The name is Heftziva, I think. Heftziva. The double name. Heftziva. Now, yeah.
Person, even as great as Chizkiyahu, is supposed to know whether to listen to a nevuah. When Mordechai had a nevuah, that Esther should marry Achashverosh. You're not allowed to marry a goy. So why was that the right thing to do?
Right. So neither of them had a nevuah to do anything.
So she listened to the advice of Mordechai.
So I'm saying Chizkiyahu did not have a nevuah to not marry. He only had a nevuah that he was going to have a son who was a Rasha. He decided not to marry. Mordechai did not have a nevuah that Esther should marry Achashverosh. Mordechai, Esther was taken by Achashverosh. Once she was taken, Mordechai said to her, okay, obviously, we have no choice over here. You've been taken.
Did he not advise her to go to the king?
No. He hid her. He tried to keep her it was the king's men that took her. All the girls were trying to get away from Achashverosh.
But isn't that a situation where she could have rather chosen to kill herself than to...
She could have, but in the Gemara discusses, when does one give up their life? The Gemara says that for a female with a non-Jew, if she's being coerced, she need not give up her life.
Okay.
It would be different if it was a male. It would be different if it was willingly. It would be different if it was not a non-Jew. If it was another prohibition of some sort. But in those circumstances, the Gemara says a woman is not required to give up her life. What he tells her to do later is to go willingly. She's already married to Achashverosh. And then he says, you have to go to save the Jews' lives. That was telling her to do an Avera, to go willingly to Achashverosh.
Right.
No, that's true. But it wasn't through prophecy.
Okay.
It wasn't prophecy. That's a good question, but it wasn't prophecy.
Okay.
It was Mordechai then. Okay. Now, we're going to have to stop. You see, I brought other Sfarim over here. The Chizkiyahu, when he is healed from his sickness, actually it's before he's healed from his sickness, it's the day that he finds out that he's going to be healed, and he davens. We have in Yeshayahu, in Paraklam in chapter 38, we have 12 psukim, 12 verses, that begin Michtav l'Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. A Michtav means literally means a writing, but it means a prayer of thanks from Chizkiyahu, the king of Yehudi, b'chaloso v'yichim icholyo, when he got better from his sickness. That he has a poetic, which is always very hard to translate, set of 12 psukim praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for healing him from his sickness. I think we'll read it together. I'm not sure if we'll read it together or not. But the reason why this is so significant is, remember, the reason Hashem does not make Chizkiyahu Mashiach is because he does not say Shira, he doesn't say sing for the destruction of Sancheirev. Lest you think Chizkiyahu was incapable of composing something, lest you think Chizkiyahu wasn't aware that it's the right thing to do, you see that he does so. 12 psukim, that's a long song, a long poem that he composes in thanking Hashem for being saved from the sickness, which only accentuates the point that Chizkiyahu is not singing for the destruction of Sancheirev was a deliberate decision on Chizkiyahu's part. It wasn't that he forgot. It wasn't that he didn't think of it. He decided that it was inappropriate to do so. He was wrong. But we're going to have to understand what was his thinking and then why was it wrong. Like all of the mistakes the great people make, it's going to be something which is a subtle error, where there is room to hear both sides. Whereas Chizkiyahu has a very good point, but unfortunately it was a mistake. So we are going to get to that. I don't know. There's so much going on. I don't know what order we're going to do things, but at least for now we have this. Let me just tell you, I'm going to shut off the recording and give you the schedule.